Hello and welcome to 20 Tim Minutes, a podcast that focuses on mental health in a serious but yet humorous way. Listen as I interview a wide variety of guests where we show our support as well as sharing our own personal struggles and stories with mental health. I am your host, Tim McCarthy, and now it's time to talk about it. Hey, what's going on, everybody? You're tuning into another episode of 20 Tim Minutes. I am your host, Tim McCarthy. Today we have on psychologist and therapist, who is also the CEO of One Perfect, which is a way to guide yourself into a better state of mind anytime, Dr. Sean Sullivan. How are you, sir?
Excellent, Tim. How's it going? Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Fantastic. I'm doing pretty good. I got to say this, point it out. You have a great head of lettuce on you, sir.
you got me pretty early over here today, so I think we're still wet from the shower, but can see we got the morning sun coming in.
I made sure to wear my hat today so I didn't have to compare my hairline to your hairline. So
it's not a competition.
I usually start with this with everybody. What does mental health mean to you, sir?
Mental health? I think of mental health as really like a measure of mental health is your capacity to shift into a better state of mind when you choose to. So if you're in a rough place, are you able to get out? I mean, we all fall into rough places from time to time. Some of us live there. So for me, mental health, a measure of your mental health is your capacity to shift out of that when you need to get yourself to a better place. And that's, you know, very much ties into the work that I do.
Let's talk about the work that you do. You're a psychologist. What does a psychologist do? Because a lot of people get that confused with psychiatrist. And then to add on to that, why did you want to help people?
Yeah, so you're right. There's a lot of confusion around what psychologist is. All of these definitions, you have a psychiatrist, which is someone that is a medical doctor that prescribes medications, psychopharmacological medications in general. A psychologist, generally speaking, doesn't prescribe medication, but provides psychotherapy and also provides sort of diagnostic. So it's really well-trained to be able to tell you what's going on with you and what the best course of treatment might be, and then also to provide that treatment. So that's the distinction between those two. And then there's lots of other kind of therapists out there. One of the things that I think is pretty excited about this field over the last 20 years is that we've seen that just untrained people, moderately trained people are able to provide enormous value to other people who are struggling with mental health issues. So there's so much that anyone who's interested in helping people can do to help people. We know that now. The other half of that question was, what was the other half of that question, Tim?
Why did you want to help people? Like, obviously, like a psychologist is a big job to do.
Yeah. So actually, in college, I wasn't a psychology major and didn't get into it until the end. I think my background coming into it was, my dad was a professional tennis player, and so he was my coach and trained me all about getting into the right state of mind to perform and compete. And so I had that kind of background. I didn't really think of it as psychology until later, when I needed psychology to help my mental health. Towards the end of college, really bad breakup, had no skill. I had those skills about getting ready to perform in sport, but I didn't know how to get myself out of waking up in the morning and having a massive sort of pain in my gut and chest, and just waking up to a new reality that I wasn't used to and didn't want. And so that was actually the first time that I went to see a therapist, was my senior year in college. I went for a session. You know, I'm from Boston like you, mm-hmm. from that area. And in my family, and I think this is typical at the time growing up, therapy, sharing your feelings, taking your feelings outside of the home was not really a thing. It wasn't something that you that was looked at as impressive at all. And so for me, I had to be in a lot of pain. I think this is for a lot of people, to kind of just trudge my way in to get some help. But I did. But by that time, I was 22 or whatever. And the therapist actually was helpful. But what I remember from that was, she said at the end of the session, I don't have time to see you again for 2 weeks. Come back in 2 weeks. And I said, okay, you know, like, tough guy, like, I'm fine. But as I was walking out, I knew, like, I can't make it 2 weeks. What is she talking about? You know? And so I started looking for other ways to cope, and actually started learning to meditate and all of these other tools that I've led into my life. And so I think this is kind of long form answer to what got me into therapy, but the truth is probably, you know, engaging in it myself, seeing what worked, what didn't, and then realizing I really didn't have any skills. You know, why would you have skills that were really designed to get you out of a mess if you hadn't been in that kind of a mess? You know, it's sort of hard to learn those skills until you've been in that mess. So I took it upon myself to learn those skills. And I said, I want to learn everything I can about this. This is super interesting. There's this actually a marriage between this performance psychology and this other psychology, because really it is about being able to shift yourself, no matter where you are, into a better place. So I came to see it as like mental health is shifting from bad to good. You know, performance or wellness health is shifting from good to great. Same process. Probably when you're struggling mentally, it's you have fewer resources, right? So it's really hard. It's harder to make the shift when you're in rough shape, but the process is the same.
Being from Boston, I feel like, yeah, we hold our emotions in. But like, yeah, how is it with like men showing their emotions? Like, why is that such a big struggle for most men?
Well, we probably could talk about that for a long time, yeah. But you know, staying on the Boston theme, you know, a lot of the male-to-male relationship is just messing with each other as a form of love, you know, or whatever you want to call it, right? But yeah, it's meant to be a bonding sort of vibe. But that means that when you have something genuinely vulnerable and authentic to share, that it's likely that what's going to come back at you, because it's sort of the only gear for most of us until we kind of go through either ourselves or needing to help someone and kind of learning a language around how to be helpful and caring and authentic, you're going to get some incoming about, you know, we can say anything on this show, I know, but you know, what a pussy you are basically would be the loving sentiment to help you.
Right.
So, you know, I think that's shifting over time. I work a lot with Gen Z now, and these, you know, it's tough to generalize, right? But these guys are really in touch with a language that describes their emotions in a way. You're younger than I am, but in a way that I didn't learn, and I suspect didn't sort of start being taught effectively until more recently. So it's changing probably.
What do you think about the whole social media thing? Speaking of Gen Z, I feel like a lot of kids will like try to tell people about their mental illness and they might not be diagnosed and they might say something that might not be beneficial to somebody else. Like, what's your take on like the whole social media aspect of mental health?
Oh, yeah. Interesting. I did come across what were called influencers in mental health for the first time a few years ago. And I thought probably what you're getting at, well, this is in some ways, let's say, I don't want to say the blind leading the blind, but it's certainly maybe the untrained giving advice. So there's that piece of it. I think it's pretty clear that's one way to think about social media that probably is constructive is you remember the tale of Narcissus, who sort of looks in the pond for the first time and sees his own face.
Yep.
So this is what social media has done, really, is that everyone who has grown up looking at their own face has to sort of cope with what that projection is into the world. And they're viewing themselves through the lens of everyone else, rather than developing sort of a core valuing of themselves that doesn't have to do with what they look like in the mirror. And so that's a major differentiator in the way that people develop and grow up now. And I think it's pretty harmful to your mental health, because to the degree that you're processing who you are through the lens of largely the mob, right? It could be close friends, but it's really the mob. It's not how you want to be judging yourself or determining what changes you might want to make to yourself.
Yeah, I try not to give much advice.
I don't use it, basically. It's the short answer for me.
You're right. Yeah, that's actually good. I think a lot of people, like my friends that don't have social media, like live the happier life.
It's tough to get out of it once you're in, right? Like everything, every addiction, tougher once you're in. You know what you're missing, or you think you're missing, and the flip side of it. Well, social media flows out to like gaming and everything else, right? So really, your whole social life develops around it. So it's really there's costs to shifting away from it that make it hard to do.
Yeah, with the podcast, that's like me. Like, I have to have a whole social media presence to keep with the podcast. And then, like, yep. I was, like, running myself down. And so, like, I had to take my own time, make sure I was, like, working on the podcast, like, not really on my days off. And I do, like, self-care. So it's definitely important. Like, for everyone out there, like, self-care is, like, pretty big. What about you? What do you do for self-care?
Well, we touched on a little bit at the beginning, this idea of being able to shift your state of mind. And so that's very much at the core of how I do it and what I do. So the work that I do is focused on teaching people how to shift into a better state of mind anytime. And the reason for that largely is what I needed to learn. I was overnight having a lot of anxiety, waking up in the middle of the night. Oh, got to get up in the morning, haven't got enough sleep, got too much to do, the whole thing. And realized, oh, you're a psychologist. You really need to address this issue. And so that was sort of the there are a couple origin stories of what shifts are and how they came to be. But the personal one is that I needed to teach myself in those moments overnight to kind of calm down and get back to sleep. And once I realized there's a real process to doing that that works, I'm like, oh, let's apply this concept, you know, broadly. So when you're unmotivated, you in the One Perfect Shift app, for example, you identify I'm lonely, I'm sad, I'm frustrated, I can't sleep, I'm unmotivated. In 5 to 10 minutes, you get a shift into the state of mind that you want to move into. And so for me, the self-care really starts there. If overnight you're not sleeping well, get yourself into a better place, get to sleep. Even if you can't get yourself all the way to sleep, you can get yourself into a deep state of relaxation and rest, and you're going to get nice rest. If you can do that, if you can learn that one skill, I can teach you the whole rest of it very easily, right? So there's that. When I wake up in the morning, first thing, and the key thing to me, I think you'll appreciate being 20 minutes, is 20 minutes is a long time for meditation for most people. So these are 5 minute, 5 to 10 at the most shifts. So first thing in the morning, I pick a shift. I do it. I either record one or I complete one, just to get myself into connection with the present moment, connect to the day. So those, if I had to give two examples, those would be the two. Because if you can finish your day right, you know, overnight, good sleep, and then start your day right, it really, it's very predictive of how the rest of your day is going to go if you can get yourself in a good starting place.
Right. Meditation is always something I've been intrigued in. I feel like I can't do it. Like, how does one get into meditation? What's like the big thing that like you start off with?
Well, taking a long, deep breath, setting that intention to come into the present moment. You know, really what I've learned that it is, because I record these all the time now and, you know, have done thousands of them and teach people how to shift, which is a form of meditation. So meditation is sort of a broad term for any way that you're directing your attention. There's lots of different ways to do it. Mindfulness, I'm sure you've heard of, a lot of your audience has heard of. Mindfulness is really defined as your the ability to observe what's occurring in the present moment non-judgmentally. So just noticing what's arising in your mind and how you're feeling. So those are different classifications. Shifting is setting a very specific intention and then taking 5 minutes and moving towards it. So when I say take a long, deep breath, that's just to begin. Then you would set the intention to, say, shift into a present state of mind over the next 5 minutes. So you really know what you're doing. You're telling yourself, here's what I'm doing, and you're wrapping language around it. And I don't want to nerd out on it too much, but when you get good at it, you can learn to speak yourself into it. And when you actually speak it, this is going to be intimidating for a lot of people because they think, oh, it's so hard, I don't want to hear my own voice, all that. But when you speak your truth out loud, resonates in your body, changes your body, it has a profound effect on how you're going to think and feel. So, but that's a little off the track of your question. Take a long, deep breath. Set an intention. It might be come into a flow state. It might be I want to get myself meditated. It might be I want to stop feeling sad. So really be clear about what your intention is. And then, you know, you can go to oneperfectshift.com and get free shifts all day and choose, you know, I'm feeling sad, and you get 5 minute audio experience that talks to you about, you know, what sadness is or what loneliness is, what anger is, what fear is, through the shift. So it says, how do you really want to be thinking about this stuff? And gives you a moment to reflect on it and some, you know, very tested flows of information that over 90% of the time that we've done this now for 4 years, people report at the end, that they were able to shift to a better state of mind. So this shocking thing to me in this whole process has been, I'm surprised how easy it is. I thought it's going to be difficult to get people to shift their mind. What I came to find through the research is that it's more difficult to get people to shift when they need to, because you don't feel like taking care of yourself when you're down. You don't feel like, it's very hard to take 5 minutes for your mental health at that moment. So that's the bigger challenge that we ended up working on. And now we send shifts by email. You subscribe, you get a couple shifts a week by email. You can read through them in your inbox. You can click and do audio. You can come to the app and personalize them, record your voice, all that stuff. But the very basic one is the one that works best in my mind. You get it in your inbox, no pressure, no one looking at you. You can scroll the text as fast or as slow as you want, because most people, especially starting, you're like, oh gosh, this is taking forever. What's this voice? I'm not into the, you know, whatever it might be. But if you just have it in your inbox to read, you know, the way that I learned to do it is like you say, take a long, deep breath. And then I put like a bunch of dots. So you have to scroll down. You have to take a second, you know, and people speed through them. But it doesn't matter. Even if you take 1 minute oriented in the right direction, changes your physiology. So it's, you know, if you let me keep going, Tim, I'm going to talk to you all about the research and the history and all that. So,
hey, I don't mind it. Yeah. So let's keep diving into One Perfect. Like, where did the idea come from?
Well, it was largely, okay. So I told you about a couple origin stories, the overnight in bed pain, you know, the learning and the history and my own challenges with the recovery of the breakup, you know, and other things in my life. But the real seed professionally was after I became a psychologist. You start seeing patients before that, right? So I've seen people in therapy for 20 years now. I realized at some point years ago, you know, what's really strange? People come into the office, thousands over the years that I've seen, I never have had experience where in the first 5 minutes, we haven't connected, no matter what the diagnosis, what the person was coming in for, that we haven't connected in the first 5 minutes, been present, typically been laughing, like having a decent time. So I'm like thinking this person is like defining themselves as depressed, but has demonstrated in the first 5 minutes of hanging out with me that they're not depressed right now, right? That doesn't mean they're not depressed by the definitions, right? But it shows that they're capable of shifting into a better state. And it's a very natural shift, especially when you're with someone who is there to support you and you trust them sort of implicitly and they have your best interests in mind. And so all the safety things are there. But it taught me that the first 5 minutes of therapy is really shifting into a state of mind where we can collaboratively work together. And it's not hard to do. And I said, oh, okay, this is the core skill that we're actually learning in therapy, because no matter what we're working on, what we're always returning to together is coming into the present moment. Because when you're there, all the thoughts are slowed, all the self-judgments are mellowed, and your mental health as a result feels a lot better. And when you can take that from therapy and generalize it, doing it on your own, you know, now you're your own mental health coach. And that's what shifts are really designed to do, that you can do them on your own. You don't need a therapist there. Now, that said, the reason that I'm talking about this a lot nowadays is we are adding to the One Perfect Shift app live shift therapists. And I mentioned at the beginning, you don't need to be a mental health professional to become a helper, in this case, a shift therapist. We train you, we provide you with all the information you need, and you have ratings, right? So maybe you come into the app and you're like, I want someone who's good at shifting people into motivation. You scroll through, this guy's 5 stars, I resonate, he's a Boston guy maybe, let's try him. And you choose him, and the guy or the woman shows up on your screen and guides you through a proven shift, you know, stuff we've tested for years now, into a better state of mind. And if you like it, you give them 5 stars again. And like I said, this works. So it's not difficult. It's a matter of getting yourself to do it. And what we know is that people respond a lot better to other people than they do to just sort of a random audio experience. So I'm out here trying to recruit a coalition of shift therapists who are interested in spending 5-10 minutes a week helping other people, and meantime learning how to do it themselves, because you have to learn how to do it yourself in order to help others.
What would you suggest someone like me? I'm very not motivated a lot of the times. What's a good way to like shift from that?
Well, I got to start by pushing back a little bit that you're not motivated. I mean, I've seen 100 plus podcast episodes. I mean, that puts you in the way into the top 1% of people getting stuff done. So maybe you have an impression of yourself in certain situations, you know, that's not motivated, or like, here's the only thing I do that I'm motivated, or like the fear of this thing being due is what gets me, like some story around it. But I think, you know, take a step back and recognize you're getting a lot of stuff done. And you can probably tell the audience better than I can that the tip of the iceberg is you and me talking for getting your thing to work, right? You're doing, like you said, the social. You have to be enormously motivated to do that. But okay, so that is just like little observation. On the kind of flip side, the answer side, I think motivation, you know, for me particularly flows out of feeling connected to what is purposeful to me. And so I suspect you, just like me and everyone else, you know, when you're feeling like this is your purpose to do this podcast, you pop in there and it's great. And probably once you start doing it, it's, you always remember that because it kind of connects with the reason you started. It's the getting started that's tough. And so again, to me, that's what shifts are all about. You know, there, when you, for me, I wrote a book called Be Your Purpose, right? So I've thought a lot about this stuff. For me, what that means is when you come into the present moment and you recognize yourself, I'm going to get a little foofy here for a Boston guy, but when you recognize yourself as 30 trillion cells buzzing into existence completely outside of your control every single moment, you, for me, that tells me, okay, you know, like when I get in my head, I'm forgetting the fact that I'm a buzzing miracle and I'm really not driving the ship. Like, why don't we slow down, listen to what the ship is saying, and follow what, where it wants to go. And that's where you connect with purpose, like what feels right for you now. And to me, you know, just by that scientific reality, all of us have different purposes at different moments. We're taking different journeys. We're 30 trillion different cells buzzing like a countless number of times to even have an experience. So come into awareness of and respect of that and listen. And all of a sudden you're like, oh yeah, all these petty little things running through my mind are not the real deal. The real deal is like the life that I am, the life that I'm part of, that I'm fully connected to. Tell me to stop, Tim, because I'll keep going.
No, I like it. Keep going. I did have a question real quick. I always find this interesting. As a psychologist, do you still see a therapist?
I've seen, I would say over the years, probably tried five different therapists. A couple of them I felt were not, you know, constructive or helpful. A few of them were. For me, you know, I can go further into answering the question. I don't see anyone right now, if that's the question, but part of becoming a therapist, a psychologist, when I did it anyways, was that you were really encouraged to see a therapist, to understand what it was like on the other side. And of course, more importantly, probably understand yourself. And what I learned from that experience largely was that if you want to get support from someone, which I highly recommend, a therapist relationship can be amazing. A coach relationship can be amazing, but it's about finding someone that you actually respect where they are in their own life. You're not going to know everything about them, but you can visually see and make judgments about, is this someone that I would like to model in any way? And if they're not, then why, you know, why would you be there? Not just because they have a degree or they're telling you they know something is not, in my view, a good reason, but that there's someone that, you know, you could connect with and admire. You know, once I often get asked for referrals from people that I know, because you don't see people that you know as a therapist in general. So I am always referring to people. Usually it's people that are older. I want someone with a little gray, that's got some background, some lessons, some learnings, and that is settled in a place in their life where it's like, okay, they have the evidence of their success is their success. Their mental health success, I'm talking about.
Right, right. What makes you a good therapist?
Well, I would say a few things. I've lived this, you know, really fully 100% for over 20 years now. I think I have some of the qualities that often make good therapists are really curious, extremely sensitive and empathic. I just love people. I tend to see the best in people very naturally. And that's not typical. You know, a lot of people, I have friends who will say they find it very difficult to be a nice person, you know, like just very difficult. And I get that. I think that that's a certain, there's personality styles, right? There's a range. I happen to have a personality style. I don't find it difficult to be a nice person. I like to give other people compliments. I don't feel particularly threatened or defensive about life. I have my own share of problems. I'm not trying to represent that it's not it, that I'm some sort of a perfect specimen,
right?
But I think those qualities in particular are helpful for being a good therapist or really just a helper person in general.
What are some problems?
To the degree that I'm good, Tim, you're the one who said I was good.
Yeah. Hey, I said great, actually.
Oh, sorry. Thank you.
Do you face any problems as being a therapist or anything?
Any sort of just problems in general, personal problems?
Yeah. Like, do you have like problems with any like patients like that, are, like just like push back at you and you're like, you just don't connect to them?
I've been asked that before, and so I have actually thought about that. There's only been one patient I've ever seen who I was a bit scared because he was violent. You know, he'd tell me violent stories, violent fantasies, and it was difficult to distinguish how, well able he was to control that or how it directed at his therapist. It might be that kind of stuff. And now that I'm mentioning that, I'm remembering other experiences. So that's in my practice, right, over the last however couple decades. But early in my training, I worked in facilities that were, they were lockdowns for not prisoners, but not guilty by reason of insanity folks who had killed someone. So they're not considered murderers because they're not they've been judged not capable of standing trial yet. So they're in this facility having killed someone, at least purportedly, right? They're accused of that. And typically in these cases, there's a lot of evidence, which is, because if you're not in a place that you're able to stand trial, you're not covering your tracks very well either in general. And so in this facility, you would drive in the morning to work and you would see a sign at the front gate that said number of days without violent incident. And it would go 1-2-0, 1-0, 1-2-0. And so, I mean, it's not funny, but I'm smiling because that did scare me. And I said to my supervisor at the time, I'm a little concerned about this. I mean, there's no, this prison has gates, locks, all this stuff, right? This place had a green line painted around the outside of the facility. And the rule was, if you're a resident, you're not allowed to cross the green line. That's the rule. Okay. So as a staff member, you feel fairly vulnerable. And I remember this is just a story. Like it's not a great mental health story, I don't think. But my supervisor said to me, don't worry about it. And I said, okay, why? And he said, you're not important enough to be assaulted. And I thought, that's not helpful. But what he really meant was, that the people that you're dealing with have on average killed one person in their whole life. And it's because something got out of control in that moment. And you're capable, it tends to be that if something got out of control, it's someone that you have a real relationship with, like there's a thing going on there. And so it's tougher for nurses, for example, who have to try to get them to do things like bathe or this or that. But his point was not particularly tactfully shared, was that, listen, you're not enough in their line of fire to be, you know, like in danger. I didn't find that to be, you know, put me at ease that much or really like to speak to how the system was working that well, but I won't belabor it.
That's very interesting. When it comes to like overall health, like how can we address the mental health challenges we all face in the world? Like pretty much like how can we help break the stigma?
I mean, I hate to keep going back to the same thing here, Tim, but I've spent my career doing this. And what I found was that this is the simplest, easiest, and most effective way to get involved in your own mental health. Learn to shift your state of mind when you choose to. Recognize that it's not a hard, it's not an abstract, difficult thing to do. It's just a matter of getting shifts into your life or getting some short process into your life that teaches you how your mind flows from point A to point B. And so I think that's it. That's how you begin to manage your mental health effectively. And the way that we teach it, introductory programs, you know, meet you where you are, choose the shift that you want. And if you make a commitment to this, not as like, if you look at all the research around meditation, mindfulness, therapy, you'll see it works, right? In all of the research. But the research usually is around, oh, you have to do it X number of times over an X period of time, and then we see brain changes, and then we see people feeling better. Okay, that's not that helpful to the average person. The average person needs to know is that, you know, just like if you want to be in cardiovascular shape, you're going to have to work out. You're going to have to run a couple times a week. You're going to, if you want a muscle, you're going to have to pump iron here and there. So you make it not like a punishment, but a lifestyle. Where to me, what happened was, it feels so good to go from not feeling in a good place to feeling in a good place in 5 minutes. That's a very self-reinforcing cycle. So convince yourself that part of your lifestyle should be some, you know, personal self-care, whatever you want to call it. And 5 minutes a day is all you need. There's now research out that shows you do 5 minutes a day for 30 days in a row, and we're showing brain changes associated with reduced anxiety, reduced stress, and all of these things, as I'm sure you know, correlate with health outcomes, right? It's not just mental health. When you have stress in your life, it's eroding your health. It's shortening the lifespan of your cells, right? Cells make up important organs, organs.
Orgasm.
that's next hour. Your important organs allow you to live. So yeah, it's very important to take care of your level of stress. Orgasms are great too for reducing your stress.
That is proven point.
Yeah.
You're a very smooth, motivating guy. Like, you're not like in your face, like, yeah, like Tony Robbins, like going like that. You're very smooth in this way. And it's like, you've shifted my mind, because I was like, when I go into these interviews, I'm like, oh, it's like, I'm not going to do a good job. I'm very negative to myself because I don't think highly of myself. But just talking to you, it's like, you give off such good vibes. Like, what do you do for fun? Like, what do you do for fun?
Oh, this is going to be real sad. I love doing this. Like, this is like, I love connecting with people. So I have a little bit of I recognize totally where you're coming from. I've had that whole thing where stress before. I used to do these psychology shows on college campuses where you go going out and in front of a lot of people. And I was trying to play guitar. I mean, it was like, so you had to get over a lot of emotional hurdles. So I empathize, totally get it, not immune from it. But I go back to the same thing I said earlier, that the first 5 minutes of therapy, always the same. Connect, you know, people, especially when we come together in this kind of environment where we want the other person to do well, to be at their best, it's very easy, right? So that's a boring answer. I love doing this stuff. I actually love doing therapy if it's not too much. I didn't like it once it got to like too many patients, but I learned to just keep a number of patients where everything was still clear in my head of, you know, who was doing what. And so I love doing that. I love doing this stuff. I live, I moved out here to a beach hut on the beach 8 years ago in the middle of the mountains. So I love, you know, getting up and jogging to the top of the mountain and, you know, keeping myself in shape. I love my girlfriend, Jenny. Shout out to Jenny. She keeps me sane, especially, you know, doing stuff on the weekends that's not just all work, which I had gotten to the habit of for a while. I have two brothers, two sisters, like great close-knit Boston family. You know, anytime I talk to them, it's total juice.
Yeah.
And I had fallen in love with writing. I mentioned I wrote a couple books. It's a different kind of love, though, because this is just like, so you're so in it, you know, it's overwhelming. Like, you're waking up in the middle of the night writing stuff. And so that's, I love it, but it's a different kind of love. So I guess it depends on the kind of love too.
Right. And how important is a support system? We actually touched briefly on that, but like, how important is that to have someone like Jenny, your family, like how important is that on the list?
Yeah. I mean, I guess there's just enormous amount of research out there that your support network, your relationships are the drivers of your stress level. There's plenty of research that shows that the number and quality of your relationships, as defined by you, you know, because it's about how it feels for you, is very correlated to your lifespan. So, you know, we know that people live longer, healthier, happier if they have a network of support. And so to me, that's enough evidence that it's important.
What do you miss Never most?
Feels good.
Right.
Different people have different needs though, Tim. Like, we can't completely generalize, right? Some people are like more loners. That's cool. But whatever that kind of support network that fits you is important to have.
Yeah. What do you miss most about Boston?
Oh, I mean, I miss seeing my dad, my sister, my nephews. My other brothers and sisters are spread around a little bit, so I definitely miss seeing them too. But I miss that about Boston. I miss about 6 months a year of the weather.
Yeah,
I grew up playing hockey and tennis. Like, now my nephew's playing hockey at the same rink that I grew up learning. He's 6'7" and just getting after it. So when I hear the stories, there's like the nostalgia for sure. And yeah, it's home. So
I hear that. I hear that. You kind of sold it already, but why should people download the One Perfect app?
I mean, if you want to learn to shift your state of mind in 5 minutes anytime, it's the best way I know to do it. But, you know, like I said, I'm here trying to get people to become shift therapists. So if you're interested in learning more about how to do that, you know, if you go to oneperfectshift.com and just subscribe and begin getting your feet wet with shifting, then I'll send you some emails at some point saying, here's how you do this. You know, it's not, this is not an expensive thing. Actually, we're trying to grow the community. So this isn't about like trying to get money from people. But right. I can give you the full intro that way better. OnePerfectShift.com, subscribe. You're going to start to get shifts every week. It's a good way to start. And on the side, I'll introduce you to how to get more involved if you want to.
Yeah, for sure.
Or go to the app. Like you said, One Perfect Shift is also an app in the App Store and then Android. So the difference there is that you can personalize your shifts. You can record shifts and share them. And then you can blend your own voice into your own shifts. So you can really get very personalized about how you shift your mind. Like, I used to teach people in practice who were athletes to do 90-second audios for tennis players on a changeover that you listen to, so you get yourself in the right state of mind, you know, for the next game as you go out. So it's that kind of concept. You learn how to speak your truth in a way that's effective for you. That's what the app does. That's the difference.
Fantastic. I feel like I know the answer to this one. Let's put being a therapist aside. What are some personal words of wisdom you would give someone that's going through it right now?
Yeah, it's hard, man. Every situation's different. I guess the foundation is you're not alone. There's so many. I could run through stats about how many people are lonely, the percentage of people that are sad. So it doesn't necessarily help or make you feel better to know that you're not the only one with that, but it can help in some situations. I would encourage you of that. I think, to me, the important thing to get through your skull, no matter where you're at, is that when you're in a really bad place, it's really hard. Your view is distorted, so it's very hard to see that tomorrow can be better. And that's why I think learning to shift your state just a little bit is so important, because if you can go from really bad to bad, even, you know, like a 2 out of 10 to a 4 out of 10, now you can listen a little bit more clearly. You can hear when a friend wants to help you. You can see, you know, the positive incoming, and you have a shot at taking that step from going from 4 to 6 and then keep going. So, you know, we know, and when you ask this kind of question as a psychologist, my head goes to people who are in the worst place, right? So if you're in a really bad place, reach out for help, get the help you need, but recognize that when all of us have that, we go through it during our lives, different degrees, different number of times, but in every case, the problem is that we can't see the forest through the cheese at that point. We can't connect a purpose. We can't feel meaning. It's very difficult to feel love. It's difficult to feel any of the emotions that would help you get better. And so because that's the case, it might be the only thing that you can hear is, hey, your field's distorted right now, man. Just accept that your field's distorted. We go through it. It's normal. But until you can kind of clean the screen a bit, it's going to be difficult to get out of the rut.
Great words of wisdom from the great Dr. Sean Sullivan. We're going to wrap up a little bit, but I just wanted to say I'm very happy for you, very proud of you with this One Perfect Shift app. I think you're a great person. You're probably one of the smartest people I've talked to, but you're not like, you don't make me feel dumb. So like you, I can understand it, but you're a great person, man. I'm glad we got to connect on this.
Me too. I mean, I'm glad we got to connect too. That's too nice of you to say.
So I like to ask this to everybody because I feel like music, you must know, like music is such a big part of like your mental health. Like music can like really bring you up. So what would be your personal theme song? Like think about like, okay, you're coming out to a tennis match. What is Dr. Sean Sullivan playing in the background?
Oh, man. All right, I'm going to give you the two that came to mind. The Rocky theme song. I love that. I just burned through Rocky 3, 4, and 5, so that's probably why. And unfortunately, sort of this song, Someone You Love, got stuck in my mind yesterday because I heard it on the radio. Not really a theme song, to be honest.
What's the best Rocky movie?
More of a breakup song.
Yeah, right? What's the best Rocky movie?
I think Rocky One, the first Rocky, just Rocky. It's not Rocky One, right? It's just Rocky.
Right.
That was the one where the theme song, he's running up the steps of Philadelphia, right? Puts the arms up when he gets to the top. And it's authentic because he goes the distance, right? He doesn't win. Winning is going the distance. Like that's the message on that one. After that, it's about actually winning the fights. Sorry, spoiler alert if you haven't seen 1976.
Yeah, right. I'm a Rocky IV guy. He ended the Cold War. Like that's a big one.
Oh, Drago? Is that? Yeah, that's Drago. Yeah. Yeah. What was he punching? 1,700 pounds per square, whatever.
Yeah. He was just, they made him so over the top that it was so funny.
Well, the end of that one where Russia and the America come together, right?
Yeah.
If you can love me and I can love you. Yeah.
It's so ridiculous. That's why I love
it. Some of that right now. You're right. Rocky IV might be the one of the moment.
Yep. We need to come together. All right, let's end with this. What are three things that you're grateful for today, sir?
Grateful for hanging out with you, Tim. This has been really fun. Awesome. Looking outside. The sun is shining here today, streaming through the window. That brings me into presence. I'm grateful for that. And I've been lucky enough to connect with my brother a lot this week, my dad a lot this week. So, yeah, it's been a good time connecting to people who are important to me. So grateful for that.
Appreciate it. That was a good three right there. That was a really good three.
Awesome.
Dr. Sean Sullivan, thank you so much for coming on 2010 Minutes. This has been a blast.
Thanks, Tim. This is awesome. Can't wait to listen to it out there in the world. And hopefully your listeners are interested in learning to shift and supporting others through shift, becoming a shift therapist.
Yeah. Let's all shift to the positive in life, you know?
That's it. Go Boston.
Yep, go Boston. That's another episode of 2010 Minutes. Let's break the stigma by cracking a smile. I will see you guys soon.
Diagnosis or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. If you are feeling suicidal, please dial 911.